I honor.
And now I would like to introduce our main speaker for this evening, Ravishing Ron from El Centro.
Bryce, you got any fucking balls, you'd stand up and say that.
My name is Ron. I am an alcoholic.
It's wonderful to be back at this meeting. I was a little nervous today. Several people called me and said that they had promised to come to the meeting, and they said they couldn't make it, and I said, why not? And they said, well, they were waiting for the rapture. I thought that was the lamest excuse for not going to a meeting I've ever heard. But it's really wonderful. My father, as you'll hear a little bit tonight, was a Baptist preacher. We had issues. And when my dad was 84 years old, he decided that he was going to have an affair. I think he had several that the Lord had led him to pursue some of the fields white to harvest, happened to be the church secretary. And I was asking my dad, you know, I was really honest on him about it. I said, you talked all these years about adultery and all that stuff and preached to us. And he said, well, he said, actually, I've been reading my big book, my Bible. And he said, it's true, he said, that marrying someone else is adultery. But you see, he said, your mother was never a good Christian, so I was never really married. 63 years of marriage and 10 fucking kids, and he wasn't married to her. And I thought that was a little much. And then he told me, he says, and you know something else? He said, when the rapture comes, he said, it's like I'm going to be driving down Interstate 15. And I will be caught up, and your mother will still be in the car and go in the ditch. And I decided right away that I was going to look for some other theology. I wasn't really comfortable with all that. Oh, there were some rules I got in the mail for this meeting. I just want to be sure that I'm following them all. It says here, only 10 queer jokes. Oh, and it says here, where's Larry? Oh, there's Larry over there. Please do not talk about the time you picked Larry up drunk at the brass rail. Good to see some really older friends and people. Oh, one of my heroes in Alcoholics Anonymous, and we're anonymous here, but she won't mind. I'm so glad to see you, Arlene. Such an important part of my sobriety. Arlene has been sober longer than Moses. I think he was her first sponsor. Like 42, is it, Arlene? And so glad to see you. And so glad to see you in a meeting. And I'm also, don't get hurt, Bryce, I'm glad to see you too. They have strict timekeeping here, and Bryce has a little leather thong. And if I speak too long, he's going to come up and whack me. Yes, I am.
Mother, is that one of them? Well, don't worry about it, dear. We'll just beat the shit out of him after the meeting. That's all right.
I'm coming up this year on 35 years of sobriety. Next month, which means that I got sober very early when I was about 5. I love the program of Alcoholics Anonymous. And I also love to bullshit and make people a little uncomfortable. Especially, well, look, let me deal with this right now. You know I make some of you uncomfortable. And I have nothing against straight men. If something in your childhood you cannot help. If you get spiritual and take the steps, I'm sure it will be removed. Actually, you know, the old rednecks, remember Arlene from El Cajon when we were talking about registering gay groups? And there was a big fight went on about it in 1976, and this one guy I was new that year, scared shitless. And a good scared shitless, I go to a meeting and I listen to anything. Just tell me how not to fucking drink ever again. That's who I was, and that's how I was teachable. I would have sat up on a flagpole naked, well, something terrible. But I... But this man came in from El Cajon, stood up at a Pathfinders meeting and said, I'm hearing all this queer shit going around AA and I'm sick of it. Big old pot belly like anybody gave a shit about him. And he says, the truth is, if you're homosexual, it'll be removed in your sixth step. Serious. And tonight, one of the things I want to talk about is, are we willing to go to any lengths? And I want to tell you now that I listened to that man, and he had something I wanted. He was sober, and I wasn't. He knew how not to drink, and I didn't. I don't care if it's fucking Hitler himself. If you can tell me how not to drink, I will listen to you. And so I listened, and 90 days, my brain fried. Oh, well, jeez, pot-belly, rugged old stinking bastard may be right. And I did this. I went home, and I got on my knees, and when I came to this program, they said, you'll spend a lot of time on your knees. I didn't find that particularly. But I got on my knees, and I said to God this. I said, if that is true, then please give me the power to do what I have to do to stay sober. And I meant it. I stand here tonight and I'll tell you that I meant it. So people cannot ever say to me, you weren't, just some of you straight men, just think if it was the reverse, you know. You went to some gay planet called Uranus or something. And they said, you know, you got to be straight to stay sober. You got to be gay to stay sober and you're straight. How long do you think you'd stay? Some of you are leaving already. Driving you into terror. Speaking of terror, I was born in the straw, in a little manger in Michigan, some years ago. And the only thing I really want to say about that, because it says we don't regret the past. We don't wallow in it, but we don't regret the past. I don't regret my past today. And nor do I regret the terror of being a young and sensitive kid growing up in a family of seven boys. Well, there were six boys, three girls, and me. And my mother never quite put me in either one. And I was growing up with them, and that was in the 70s, and the only queer people you ever heard of were in Grace Natalia's novels, and they committed suicide after, you know, having an affair with the piano player in town, and they kicked him out. And that's all I knew, and that's all we knew then. And I was frightened. My father he passed away in 2008, and you know, before my dad died, it's a real, real big thing in my sobriety. I was angry at that man for so long, just so consumed with rage. And one day, as a part of my recovery and sponsorship and therapy, somebody said, why don't you just talk to your dad? We never talked. And when my dad was having an affair, I was sober probably then about 20 years and very, very depressed. And my dad came out to visit me, and I sat him down, and I said to my father, you know, Dad, I said, this isn't to make you feel bad, but you were not a good father. You never showed your kids any love. You were self-centered and selfish, and you beat me on a daily basis. And then I said to him, but thanks to this program that I belong to, I forgive you, and I forgive you right now. And I did. And I said to him, and I'm not doing it for you. I'm doing it for me because I don't want to spend one more second of my sober life being angry. And I was free. Free of that. This program works. When my father died, I was taking care of him. He died in 2008. I was by his bedside. We were kind of friends, except every once in a while he'd hit me over the head with Leviticus or something, and I'd just give him some more Vicodin. But I did lean down to my father just hours before he died, and I said, Dad, are you comfortable? And he went, this is your daughter, Ron. Are you comfortable? His eyes kind of drifted a little. And I said, now, Dad, the hospice nurse is gone, and I will be giving your suppositories tonight. And I have a brother in AA. Said that was it. He checked out. Working out of here. Suffered enough. But I grew up in that, and what I thought was something that alcoholics know, was that I need to get out of here. If I can just go somewhere, if I can move, if I can find a different place, we call it geographics, I didn't know then, but somewhere over that rainbow, somewhere over there, it's okay. And it's never okay here. Never, never, as an alcoholic, was I ever okay for a moment. There was all that fear and rage and self-pity and loss, and most of all, this feeling that I don't have to describe, we're alcoholics. We know that feeling that I didn't belong anywhere and I never would. I didn't belong with the queers, I didn't belong with the bigoted homophobes, I didn't belong to Republicans, the Democrats, the whites, the blacks, no one. I didn't belong. And so I did a very wise thing to help myself progress in life. When I was 18, I joined the Navy. Hot 1, 2, 3. My little gun, and I was marching around defending you people, and I hope you're fucking great. Yo! And one day, I walked into with some friends, and I never one time when I was in high school, I had a couple of beers, and I got sick because Elizabeth Nickert, this big chick with big, huge, puffy lips, and she was after me. And I ducked down in the hay on the hayride and got frightened and got drunk and puked. And that was it. But that was it until I went in the service and I walked into a bar. And I remember it like a spiritual awakening. I knew what to drink, and I looked up, and there was Chivas Regal. Now, I'm a queen. I like the gold bottle and shit. I'll have some of that in that gold bottle, please. He poured me a shot of that. And if you're an alcoholic here tonight, then I'll speak directly to you, and especially if you're new, is that that's the most powerful, powerful experience you will ever have, besides getting sober. My life changed. If you're an alcoholic, you know that. Everything. It was just like it was minutes. And all at once, everybody loved me. I loved them. Old mean-ass redneck sitting down at the end of the bar, he was a future husband within 20 minutes. Just see us, you know, going to bridesmaids and shopping. Everything was going to be okay. Isn't that a wonderful feeling? Remember? Oh, people say, oh, God, alcohol is so fucking terrible. No, it wasn't. It saved our lives, some of us. I was so desperate and hurt and in such a dark place, and I found a friend. I found escape. And we do pursue that into the gates of insanity and death.
And we don't do it because we're stupid or even insane. We do it because once we take that drink, our lives have changed and we want that. Who wants to go back and suffer in that pain? So I got out of the service in the Navy after defending Your Honor. And I always had it in my notions in the head about that father, you know, who never told me he loved me, and the only communication was the end of his fist on a daily basis. And I thought, someday, you know, I want my dad, some way he's going to love me. And then I thought, you know, that this was before Don't Ask, Don't Tell. And I didn't ask and I didn't tell. And I should have, because some other people were going to. There was that one captain. Well, never mind. Anyway, I thought, I better get the hell out of here and out of this uniform. They're going to find out I'm queer and I'm ruined. I'm going to have to go home and tell my dad in Michigan I'm queer and he's probably going to send me to purgatory. Well, he's Baptist. He didn't believe in that. Some horrible place. And so I thought, well, I'll get out of here and I'll go to college. And I did. Got out of the Navy. And I enrolled at San Diego State University. And I went for 4 years and got a degree. Some of you attended school the way I did. You were drunk the whole time. Don't remember your professors. But we are such great actors. And we're so bright at con that they just all thought I was just one of those 60s alienated people, you know. Oh, God, he's going somewhere. This one, he's really smart. I was just fucking drunk. Pink Chablis, Red Mountain, $2.49 a gallon. Mixed with a little 7-Up. It was pure heaven. And I began to get in a little trouble, you know, because before I was a cute little gay guy and funny and everything, and then I was just getting fucking drunk, and I wasn't cute anymore. And I would hitchhike up and down University Avenue trying to hook up with some sailors, talk about old times. And the police were getting pissed at it. And they would pick me up and they got to know me by name. They would say things like this one young officer, because we can con them, can't we con those? I said, oh, yes. My mother just passed away. She died 7 times in 1 year. And, oh, my mother's died, and I just want to die. I don't want to live anymore, and blah, blah. Oh, poor thing. Now, come on, I'll take you back to your barracks. But after a while, or back to your dorm. But after a while, they got sick of that. And they started saying, look, you keep this shit up being drunk, we're going to lock you up with hardened criminals who will do unspeakable things. That policeman someday owes me an amends. He was enabling me when I was so. And then, of course, you know what we did? It got worse, so we were going into psychology. Remember some of you back in those days? Everybody's going to psychology because we're alienated. We cannot bear society. Establishment is a blah, blah, blah. And so I started going to therapy, and they gave me wonderful things called Millerel, where you just a zombie. And it was a wonderful time. And I go to these therapies, and they finally said, you got to go to a psychiatrist. So I didn't have any money. I was working in liquor stores. That's where I always work. It's my career. That's where you work if you have a degree in English. A liquor store. You communicate. So they sent me to this psychiatrist. This psychiatrist out in La Jolla. He says to me, I'm blind-ass drunk, and by then I'd found those little white crosses, those saintly little things they had in Tijuana, remember? You'd take one of those, and you could drink the, yes, I know you. And you'd take one of those, and you would be transported into a fifth dimension. I took one of those one time in Tijuana, was drinking, and I was so insane, I wound up in a female whorehouse. Imagine the degradation that I felt when I woke up. Thank God I was still dressed. And I went into this psychiatrist's office, and he says, hey, what's your problem? And I said, I hate you, I hate my family, I hate society, I hate everybody. Hate myself. I even hate your fucking pictures on the wall. He said this to me. He said, I want you to make a house. And when you look in the house,
see all the people in there that have hurt you and tell me what they look like. And I sat there and I fucking needed a drink. And the little white pills were beginning to fade, so I was on the border of psychosis. And I thought, that son of a bitch charged me $50 to play Look in the Little House. And I hiked my little queer ass out of there and flipped him off. As I went out, he said, you're going to be a real hard nut to crack. Well, of course. So there was psychology. Then occasionally, I would do what some of the rest, I would look at religion. Because, you know, I was Amazing Grace and Just As I Am. I played the organ when I was a little girl in church, and I knew all that stuff. And so every once in a while, I'd run over to some church and get born again and get my putrid heart all washed away and have them do some lobotomy so I wouldn't remember that gorgeous Marine from the night before and be tempted further. And I'd get saved, but it didn't last long, you know. I was doing it so many times, and they were baptizing me and saving me and baths like being waterboarded. I finally said, I had enough of this. This isn't working either. I think that we need all those things. I mean, I look back at the craziness of that. We needed every drink. We needed every humiliation. I needed every bit of pain because I was not going to surrender as long as I thought there would be some other way. So in 1974, I was already getting a couple of arrests, Briggs and so forth, and those were the good times. And I was working in an old drugstore, some of you remember, down on 4th and University called the Drug King. When I was there, they called it the Drug Queen. And across from it, there was a bar called Bradley's. I like to mention that at Sunday morning closed men's, where I go. They made me take a physical, but they let me in. And I go there, and I like to mention Bradley's, because some of those bastards are sitting there, and they're going, oh, fuck. Did I sell my panties to that silly queen when I was drunk? And he'll talk about it right here. I know he will. Boom, out they go. Set up by the sponsors to see if they're willing to go to any lengths. But I went over to Bradley's. And I sat down in Bradley's bar, and this guy from Arkansas sat down beside me, and he told me I was the most beautiful thing he'd ever seen since his mother. I later saw a picture of his mother. He wasn't very nice. But he said, I really love you, and he saw the $10 bill, and we were married there at the bar. And I pursued that relationship into the gates of insanity and death. And I'll talk about that for a minute. Because we hear all this bullshit here about, oh, well, you're sober now. Now that you're sober in Alcoholics Anonymous, you don't get into sick relationships. Hang your ass outside this building tonight and watch some of these spiritual bastards chasing that poor girl who's looking real needy. Here's my big boy. Come on, I can help you. I know I can. Those relationships, ladies, they said we were sick, that we were used, we were abused. Sure, we were. But at least once in a while he told me he loved me. And nobody else did. So don't knock it. And one time, I got real, real drunk and he left me. And he went back to San Francisco. And I woke up and I know I had a good time. I could see all the paraphernalia around. And the guy was gone, and I was all beaten up and robbed and so forth. And I thought, you know, I got to do something about this drinking. I'm drinking into blackouts every night. Half of my family won't speak to me anymore. They hand me a drumstick at Thanksgiving out on the porch with my pink Chablis. Things are really getting bad, and I've got to get some help. So I called an aunt, my Aunt Barbara. And Aunt Barbara and I used to drink together. She was a barmaid up at the office and the Ram's Head and the Elbow Club, all those very, very spiritual, historical places. And I called her because she said she wasn't drinking. I called her and she says, oh, yes. She says, I'm not drinking anymore. I'm having a wonderful time. I'm going to AA meetings. Oh, Jesus. AA meetings? They're religious, aren't they? Oh, no, no, you can just believe whatever you want. I said, well, I'm not going to this. If I'm going to go to this place, they try to change me and make me straight. And I'm decidedly queer, pickled in it. Now I'm not changing. She says, oh, no. She says, this was in 1974. She says, they have gay meetings now. Listen, if you want to know real terror, be a queen and imagine going to a meeting with a bunch of straight, sober queers sitting there. And I finally picked up the phone and I called this guy named Ross. You think I'm a little sissy? I'm the Marlboro man next to Ross. He says, hi. Want to go to a meeting? No, you dizzy queen. I'm going to talk about my problems. Oh, I'm going to kill myself. My boyfriend's going to kill me. I said, if you want to go to a meeting. All right, I'll go to your fucking meeting. I want to talk. And I walked into that meeting, Arlene. It was down on 23rd and B. I don't know if you were there, but there were a couple dykes guarding the door, you know. Levi's leather boots and chain. Sit the fuck down. And there were a bunch of queens around there, sitting around, flipping through their big books and polishing the rings and said, oh, I'm so happy I don't get drunk and chase sailors anymore. And I thought, well, that didn't look real promising. But I listened to them. I listened. And I mentioned that because there are a few of you here tonight. And you're wondering, what the fuck am I doing here? Surely. And you're wondering, you know, I don't get any of this shit. And it's all I came here for is so I can get my wife back and my job back and get the police off me and get that parole officer off my ass. And you may get all that, and if that's what you came for, you'll get it all and you'll go get drunk again. Because you're not done drinking. So it doesn't matter. Don't you worry too much here about whether this dizzy queen up here is driving the newcomers away. Somebody told me that. I know he's been sober 90 seconds was his longest time. He come up to me and he says, you know, Ron, when you speak at that meeting in El Cajon, he says, you get up there and a lot of people like to hear you and they applaud and everything. But there are some guys that just look really disgusted and get up and leave. Oh, I'm so guilty. I got to be drunk. Good. I said, point the fuckers out to me. I'll buy them a cheap bottle of vodka. They're not done drinking. If I can drive you out of this meeting, you're not done. Hear it now. No human power can get us sober, and no human power can get us drunk. What are you going to do? He's going to call someone who says, Bradley's Bar, was I ever there, Mother? Nobody can get you drunk. And you know what? If we're not done drinking, I don't care if I descend from the right hand of Bill W., you won't hear a fucking thing I have to say. This is all bullshit. I don't care how spiritual I am. It's all bullshit if we're not done. And if we're done, we'll hear everything. I can get up here and I could recite the 12 steps of getting sober and straight. And you wouldn't pay any attention. You wouldn't hear anything. You're just done drinking. You hear what you need to hear. So I went to Alcoholics Anonymous and I lasted 30 days. I didn't like it very much because I decided that they weren't very nice people and they weren't very moral. I was going to the Third and Beach meeting sometimes and that stupid-ass queer meeting. Where you remember old Chuck Hay? How many remember Chuck? Chuck was this old queen, wore gobs of turquoise. And he used to go to meetings with his mother. And she's a sweet little old lady and he'd bring her to these meetings. And Chuck really became a very respected member of Alcoholics Anonymous. He died a few years ago. He was out working on a mobile home. That was his job. And I was somewhere, and I got a call and said, would you come and do one of the eulogies? We had a memorial for him up at 4th and at the queer place. And Chuck used to like to sit and flip his big book and say, lack of power is our dilemma. And so I went to the memorial, and there was dear mother, and there says, and people were getting up and saying, oh, poor Chuck will miss you. Oh, he sponsored me. Oh, he was so spiritual. And sometimes I'm not well. And I didn't know what to say, and I said, well, he got struck by lightning. Lack of power is not a problem anymore. I did. I really did. And the people went, oh, my God.
But his mother was sitting there. She thought it was funnier than hell. Well, that's a crock. I went back out and drank. And I moved to San Francisco. Moved to San Francisco because I thought I would be better understood up there. And one night I went to a party and my boyfriend was there. And he crawled off into some cave with something. I don't know what it was, male or female or beast or whatever. And I was very jealous, and I walked and I saw him, and I thought, I cannot bear this pain. And alcohol had always fixed it for me. Remember? It's there. It's my friend. It's faithful. And I went out, and I took a full tumbler full of gin. And all I got was numb. Did you ever get there? Just numb. Like I'm trapped. And so I thought, well, I need a little help, and I took a whole handful of Preludin. And it's all I got was psychotic, and they put me on a plane and shipped me back to Michigan and with my father, where, much as I hated him, the man knew something about God. And I think deep within the bowels of every alcoholic is the desire to know some power greater than ourselves. And I went and talked to my father. Did a very strange thing. He sheltered me. And they kind of, like parents do, they fed me and protected me from San Francisco until you would think this queen is done. When I got off that plane, I weighed 129 pounds and I could not talk. He's done. Don't listen to people. You hear somebody come in the meeting, oh, she won't get it. Well, she'll make it. Well, no, she won't make it. Fuck gave them that power? Nobody knows. It's like you said, we're done when we're done, and you can't scare us into this program. And so I went back to San Diego and I got another job in the liquor store with my degree in English. And on the night of June 23rd in 1976, my boyfriend was coming back, and this time we were going to live happily ever after, go to plays together, and probably join a gym. And I went out to the Juniper Cafe. And I sat down and I had two drinks. Remember how that would go? I'm just going to have these two. Then I think I'll go home and watch Playhouse Theater. I love Shakespeare. And then it was 2 hours later and I was going downhill. I was over at the dugout across the street drinking wine coolers. And then I was really getting fucked up because I went downtown to a straight bar. I mean, I was going downhill. And that's the last I remember until I was walking down the street. And we talk about the insanity of this disease. I was afraid. I was very afraid, alcoholically afraid. And I saw two men, and I said, please come home with me. We don't care. Doesn't matter. Somebody. And I saw weapons. Doesn't matter. Took them home. Kind of in this bubble, watching, knowing I was in trouble. And, of course, the next morning, I woke up, and I had been badly beaten up and robbed. And the aunt that I talked to you about came over, and she looked at me, and she said something I hope every person gets to hear. Important words to me. She looked at me, bloody and beaten up and feeling sorry. She says, if you want to continue to kill yourself, I don't want to watch. I'm not going to watch anymore. There's a meeting 1 o'clock at Pathfinders. I suggest you go. And I went. And I was done drinking. No matter. Don't care what. Just teach me how either to die or not drink again. And I thought I was in the worst place in my life, and I was in the best place in my life. Pathfinders, I go till 5-2, is that right?
Keep going.
That's what he said that night. That's just wrong, Ron. That's just wrong. I went to Pathfinder. You know what? You hear all this shit. There'd be people get up at Pathfinder and say, oh, yes, I've developed a spiritual program. And now I went up on Palomar and I took my 11th step. I found out later they just had gas, but they thought they were having a spiritual experience. And people say, you got to take your steps on your knees. No, you don't. You got to force them. Blah, blah, blah. Driving me nuts, I was fried. And this old biker named Frankie Brown got up. Mean son of a bitch. Rubbed his hands together like this. He says, if you're new here and you don't understand any of this shit, go home and do your fucking dirty dishes. How did he know I had dirty dishes? Spiritual. I went out later and asked if I could pat his leather motorcycle, but he wouldn't let me. Those are the people who helped me. Very simple. If you don't drink, you won't get drunk. Brand it. Blazing it on your brain. No matter all this shit. Whether you get laid or you don't get laid. Or whether you pray or you don't pray. Or whether you're willing or you're not willing. Shut up about that shit. It's all bullshit. Don't drink. And that is true today. And people say, oh, you can't say that because you can't just not drink in this program. Oh, yes, you can. Because if you're alcoholic as I am, there's an answer. You will either, if you're not drinking, you will either turn to the steps of this program or the pain and the loneliness and the fear and the anger and the self-pity and the self-centeredness that brought us here will drive us back to a drink. It's always there. And that's how I finally had to take the steps. They didn't seem to be really nice to me at Pathfinders. They didn't take me out for coffee. They didn't find me a special seat in the meeting. And I finally thought, these fucking rednecks hate my guts. Well, fuck them. I'm going down to South Bay where they'll appreciate me more. So I went down to South Bay and some woman got up and said, oh my God, I was drinking, I was in such a bottom. She says, I was actually drinking with a homosexual man. I thought, I'm out of here too. And I went back to Pathfinders. Some of you know Yuck Yuck Rick. He was here recently for a funeral. And I got up at the podium, and I stood up, and I said, I hate you sons of bitches. I don't believe anything. I don't like any of you, but I got no place else to go, and I'm not leaving. After the meeting, some of those rednecks came up to me.
Hey, Ron, nice to have you here. What do you think of the charges? Let's go chase some boontang later on.
It wasn't that the language wasn't there. I had other issues. When they saw I was an alcoholic and I didn't want to drink, we spoke the same language. Now, I just want to close here in my next minute or so. I think they said to 55. In my next minute, because I want to say that it's not enough in all that turmoil to leave it here. Because change comes. When I was a little girl, I always wanted to be a teacher. And I, at one point, had come to in a crazy house, a center for emotional redevelopment. And I woke up, and I was on this stretcher, and I was bound down because I was harmful to myself and others. And I thought, there goes my plans to ever teach. My life is ruined. And 3 years ago, I finished 20 years of teaching in a high school in the Imperial Valley. Teaching your children morals and the correct way to live. And they liked me. They thought it was great having a queer teacher. I said, Mom, I got a queer teacher. Oh, God, pray for him. And it was good. In a very conservative place. Students liked me, and they often asked me to speak at their graduation. And on the last graduation, I spoke. And I knew there were kids drinking, because they are, you know. They're drinking their brains out in schools and doing all kinds of drugs, and nobody's telling them the truth about meetings, or they send them off to spin dry for 5,000 and they come back and get drunk again. And I wanted to speak to those kids. And so I told them, because we had just finished reading Macbeth, and if you'll pardon me, there was a place in Macbeth where Macbeth is standing on the fortress and his enemies are coming. And his wife has just committed suicide, Lady Macbeth. And he's going to lose his kingdom and lose his life. He's lost everything. We know. There was nothing that he could believe in, nothing that mattered to him anymore. And he said this. He said those famous lines. He said, tomorrow and tomorrow and tomorrow creeps in this petty pace from day to day, and all our yesteryears have lighted fools the way to dusty death. Out, out, brief candle. Life is but a poor player. Struts, frets its hour away upon the stage, and then it's heard no more. Life is a tale told by an idiot, full of sound and fury and signifying nothing. And the kids were terrified. Is this what I'm going to? And I said, that's the way I used to feel. But thank God for a recovery program. Because today, I have a new hero. It's Forrest Gump.
who said, "Life is a box of chocolates. I've lived my dreams. I still am." Somebody said a nice thing to me the other day. He says, "Ron really pisses everybody off, and some hate him and some love him. But he loves himself, and that's what matters. And in a strange way, I love you too. I love you enough to say this to you, that 34 years ago, I came in here and I did want to die. And tonight, here, in this church, with you strange people, I want very, very, very much to live. And I owe that to Alcoholics Anonymous. So, the true message is, don't drink, no matter what." It's a great delight to be here. Thank you.